and welcome to the Classic Car Weekly podcast, the sibling podcast to the popular weekly title. I'm this week's host, Jesse Billington, and I'm joined by content editor James Peen, features editor Chris Hope, and gun for hire senior contributor James Sadlier. Gents, how are we? And we'll kick off as we usually do. How are the classic cars?
Oh, it's all gone a bit quiet. It's almost like we haven't done much with them. Well, I can be done really quickly. I'm still looking to purchase my next classic car, which I know is going to be an Audi TT Mark 1. I'm looking for something under the 100k in, not in price, in mileage. 100,000 miles,
sorry. Gold plated.
Yeah, I'm just like, you know, Puff Daddy's Audi TT. So something under 100,000 miles that's hopefully had the cam belt, the timing belt done. And with a MOT, and I mean, I'm not asking for much here, decent tyres and a good service history, but I'm on the lookout. Everything I find is either in the Outer Hebrides or further. So I'm still on the lookout, but because we've been at Goodwood Revival, I've been a bit busy. But how about you guys? How are you guys doing with your respective classics?
I'm not looking forward to the weather this weekend.
This is your little trip out.
Yeah,
out, isn't
I'm
it?
Hoping, well, I'm definitely getting to the Peak District, and I was hoping to take the Mini, but the weather isn't looking great, so I might sort of shrink out of that one and just take my my modern BMW. But yeah, fingers crossed for decent weather. But yeah, judging by what it's like at the moment, I don't much fancy driving my Mini in that weather. So
yeah,
we'll see.
It's not looking good. Mr. Peen, any progress? Because I know you've been sort of spanning all through all of yours sort of in different parts. Any progress?
Zero progress. Last two weekends, I've been at shows. So did the Beauty Auto Jumbo, followed by a Revival, and now it looks like it's going to rain. So I'm predicting zero progress will be the theme.
That sounds about right. And yeah, no progress on me either. The MG got it started and running the other week with the help of a friend, and now I'm sort of tracking down getting a brand new distributor, because essentially turns out that all of the electrics in that car, as I've long suspected, are a bit of a Frankenstein, really. It's a proper hodgepodge of different bits. We'd found that someone had left a load of condensers and stuff when it ran points, and then just slapped an electronic ignition sort of adjusted distributor in there, and was sort of wondering why it was a bad starter. So I've sort of been online, spoken to a chap called the Distributor Doctor, or Dizzy Doctor, and essentially he's got on his shelf a ready-to-go points distributor for an MG Midget. So I can either take it all the way back to points and then sort of properly clean and adjust the entire electrical system to suit electrical ignition, or ask him to set it up for electrical ignition, just sort of plug it in and play and off we go. So I've got to do a bit of digging, get to the workshop, check exactly what bits I've got actually attached to the car, what bits I've got floating around, and make a play from there. But progress there. And also bumped into the PR chap for Berlin, who own the company that owns SU carburettors, and they've said they will help me source some sort of performance intake manifold elements for the carbs as well, so I can get some nice snorty intake noises.
I mean, to be fair to Jesse, it's taken him a year to get to this point. I think he is entitled to a little bit of just reveling in the success of having a running car, even though not quite on the road yet. So
it's not quite on the road yet. It will get on a rolling road soon as well, because a friend who helped me sort of get it sort of officially started and running, he's got a race workshop. They were racing at the Goodwood Revival, and essentially when it'll be an evening sometime, because he's racing most weekends or got cars on track most weekends, we'll try and get it up to his workshop of an evening and put it on the rolling road and get it properly dialed in. But there's no point doing that until I've got a distributor on there, until I've got new jets in the carburetors, new intakes on the carbs. There's no point sort of getting it tuned and then changing a load of stuff and then needing to tune it again. So now we know we're at a good point. I can sort of leave it sit, acquire the next round of parts, get it all together, and then go from there. So it's looking good. We're finally back on the road and moving forwards, which is where I wanted to be by this point in time. It should be ready for my birthday, which would be nice. So have it finished by the start of October is the end game.
Well, in time for the NEC then.
Yes, in time for the NEC. Hopefully it'll drive itself to the NEC in November as well, but it's not on the Classic Car Weekly stand. We can't tell you what's on that, because that's a surprise for November. But speaking of shows, obviously, as we've already alluded to, we've all been at the Goodwood Revival. And Chris, I'll start with you, because it's been a little while since you were at the Goodwood Revival. What was it like going back? What was sort of the standout bits for you? What was it that you'd missed having not attended for a little while?
There's various things that I missed. I really like the setup that they have for Over the Road. I really like how you almost have two shows in one at the Goodwood Revival. I mean, just obviously, from my point of view, I just like sort of having a nosy around all the various sort of stalls, not only for me, but for my car as well. And yeah, just it's an event that I keep on sort of saying I really want to bring my family along to, because they've got the fun fair there, they've got the outdoor cinema there as well. And that's before you've even sort of crossed the bridge into the sort of the circuit itself. I was thinking about this, and just it kind of stands out as an event. If you are there for multiple days, you can take a slightly sort of laid back approach. You don't feel as though you have to be sort of stood watching every race. There's enough racing going on and enough qualifying sessions, particularly if you're there on a Friday. That means that if there is multiple races that you want to see, you can spread it out across the weekend and you can take in all of the theme displays. You don't feel as though you have to sort of rush past those and get straight to the action sort of thing, which I think I sometimes feel with other sort of motorsport events. It really is an event that you can sort of get a full 3 days from if you are there, sort of thing, if you're lucky enough to be in that position. I'm the only one that did a day, and I spent a lot of that time sort of finding new stories and things like that, but I still had plenty of time to sort of take in the atmosphere of the event. And it is unique. There is nothing else like it that I have been to. It's not just the period dress. It goes well beyond that. It's all of the sort of actors and actresses that they bring in. I think it was James, you and I were sort of walking in over the road. It completely muddy Glastonbury sort of fest, and yet randomly there was like a dozen women in swimsuits with their swim caps on sort of thing, and they were having their own conversation and they were in their own little world, and it's just like, yeah, I've arrived at Goodwood sort of thing. It's nothing else like it, really. So and you can just spend your time sort of watching and keeping your eye out for these little things. So it's very easy if from our point of view, where we go there to do a job, we go there to generate content sort of things, have that tunnel vision. If you do just sort of take a step back and take in your surroundings, they're almost like Easter eggs. It's like things that you could so easily miss that are just going on. And it adds so much to the experience when you do just take that slightly sort of laid back approach. And the format and the timetable, the race and everything going on does allow you to do that, even in quite a congested schedule that we have. So yeah, it's completely unique.
Yeah, it is one of those brilliant events, because you get to sort of the entranceway. If you either come over the road, or if you come through sort of the main gated entrance, there's just always sort of like essentially constant street performances going on. And each year it's a different theme, where they've got a different thing they're celebrating. Last year it was the Wild Wild West, because it was celebrating, I think, like the anniversary of the first Western to be shown on UK television. This year they were going for the Summer of Love, so there was sort of this sort of great hippie sort of bandstand. They had literally just a lot of live music constant from a band performing on stage throughout the day, with sort of stage sort of protests and demonstrations with sort of period police officers and so on and so forth. You could go around and just spend an entire day watching just the live theatre around Goodwood, let alone even sort of getting close to the racing. And a lot of people do attend, not necessarily for the racing, but for just the historic festival element of it, the classic clothing, the sort of live performances and all the bits that go alongside it. And I think that it's an event that truly sort of has that sort of duality to it. You can go as a complete car sort of fanatic and go along and watch brilliant racing, or you can go along with someone who just enjoys sort of reveling in a revived period of time, and it is great for that. And it is, like you said, one of those things you could take the family to and not have children get bored after 3 days.
You can't help but when you get to the top of those steps, either when you're on the over the road section and you're going into the event, you can't help but turn around and just look back sort of thing, because you see like this huge helter skelter, you see the Ferris wheel, you just see all of this sprawling sort of tents of various things. I always take a photo of it sort of thing, because there really is nothing else like it to my mind. And I think that's not just within sort of the classic car event circle. I think it, as you say, it stands out as just sort of an event very much on its own, in whether you're interested in sort of, you know, period dress or the racing side of it.
It is brilliant when it comes to those sort of things. James, you were sort of on car park duty when we arrived on the Friday morning, so we sort of left you out to sort of basically trawl around, again, a separate element of the event entirely, is the sort of pop-up car show that forms over the road, where all the classic cars sort of agglomerated into sort of one sort of walk-around show. there's some great cars you've spotted that have made it into this week's issue. Are there any other cars that you'd spotted, didn't get a chance to chat with owners of, that really stuck out to you, like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen one of those, and someone's brought it along and parked it in a field for Goodwood Arrival?
Absolutely. And just to clarify for listeners, when they say car park duty, I wasn't the car park marshal waving in cars. I know. So yeah, my job on the Friday was to, it was to interview the owners of the car, people coming in pre-1966 cars, and then we had a separate part of the car park that was reserved for tax exempt cars. So you almost had two sections, and there was 6,000 in total, and absolutely amazing. Even like it didn't make it in, but there was a fabulous lineup of Volkswagen Type 2 campers that I know James would have lusted after here, and they had literally turned up not to take their cars on track like everyone else. They'd parked up because they just wanted to come and see the anniversary parade of the campers, and yeah, that was wonderful. And lots of American cars as well, like Mustangs and Buicks and Buick Chryslers. I'm just reeling off like names at the moment, but some really interesting people. The one thing I did take from that car park was something that Chris just said, there's nothing else like it. And there were a lot of people who driven their classics, their Citroen DS from the continent, from various parts of France, one guy from Guernsey and different places. And they said, we come all this way because there's nothing else like this. Even in France, you've got a Le Mans classic, which is great, and all these other great events, but there's nothing like Revival. So yeah, it was great. I spent half a day just interviewing various owners before chatting to people on track, but we'll get to that. I'll let.
Yeah, a lot of car park or sort of classic car shows, one of the things people say is sort of don't forget the car park or don't overlook the car park or always check the car park. And I think Goodwood Arrival is one of those things that really embodies that, because it's almost sort of lent into that aspect and has sort of the car park as very much a part of the show unto itself. And I remember when I took the MG down one of the years when it was working and had it in the sort of tax exempt car park, and you sort of think, as press, we're sort of rushing to get in, get to the press office, set up and crack on with the day, but you sort of meander your way through the car park going, well, I haven't seen one of those in ages, or can't believe someone's come all the way in that. And you do get this sort of fantastic, just sort of sprawling mass of classic cars. And again, you sort of like getting onto the bridge and looking back at it. You've got the fairground, all the tents, the drive-in cinema, and then beyond that, you've just got literally acres and acres of just classic cars laid out before you as well. It is something that you don't have to be a huge racing enthusiast to go along to. You can still be a classic car fan and just spend a day, if you buy sort of the cheaper Friday tickets, just spend a day going around the classic car show that forms there is great. James, you had a sort of a front row seat when it came to some of the track action, when it came to certainly the parades and the Volkswagen buses as well.
Well, yeah, as the dedicated Volkswagen geek, I was lucky enough to get on the split-screen van parade, which kind of reminded me why splits are amazing and also so terrible due to the weather. So very, very steamy windows, a very, very slow, noisy laps, but a huge amount of fun. And to be part of that with 100 other buses is just quite amazing. But I think it was probably the slowest lap I've ever seen of the Goodwood track.
Potentially the sheep from the Jim Clark braid might have set a quicker lap time than the vans going around. But I did get to watch it on the Sunday and sort of seeing them all sort of filtering into the circuit and then sort of setting off on their lap. And you're like, you think immediately, you go, okay, once you've seen one Volkswagen T2 bus, you're probably going to see them all. But every single one that came past was different, and it was great to see the variety of sort of body styles and modifications of the way that people have enjoyed and really sort of embraced their T2. And you sort of go, no, I can see why that this works as a parade, because it is visually so stunning.
It's such a slick operation as well, isn't it, at the Revival. One of the things that sort of stands out to me is that at any given moment when you're moving around the circuit, there will be cars going to and from races. There will be cars going to and from the parades that they're taking part in. There's marshals all over the place, and the reason for that is that you are sharing the roads and gangways with vehicles that are making their way to the track, sort of thing. So even if you don't have paddock access, it's very easy to have literally feet away from sort of million pound sort of Aston Martins and Jaguar-y types and things like that. So you very much feel involved, you very much feel part of it, sort of thing. So you know, you never feel like you're separated from it, that it's sort of barriered off, sort of thing. You can sort of get really close to these sort of vehicles, and I think even like the assembly area, it's quite easy just to sort of like sit on the fence and look in, sort of thing. So I can't think of any other sort of like event like that whereby, I mean, obviously there's the Silverstone Festival where you can go into the pits and things like that, but the second they start moving, it becomes something separate. These cars taxiing to and from their areas, I think that is kind of like a unique thing to Goodwood as well, just because of the way it's laid out, just the way that it works as an event.
It utilizes stages, aren't there, where you can just see the cars as they're sat waiting, and then they go to a holding area, like you say. I was going to add one thing, is that the general consensus is that you don't have to be a massive car fan or expert to really enjoy Goodwood. The amount of people who really had not a huge following on classic cars were absolutely loving the thrills and the excitement of it, and that makes it inclusive. It felt like it was a really inclusive event.
It adds to that period feeling, because you can imagine that's how it would have been back in the 50s and 60s, sort of thing. You weren't segregated. It wasn't sort of, I mean, I'm not for a second saying that health and safety and things like that haven't been taken a part of, but there is sort of a feel of it just being sort of set back in time, and it just being not even necessarily sort of laid back. As I say, I'm not for a second saying that Goodwood organisers are playing fast and loose with those sort of things. I think that the amount of marshals that are there to keep people out of the way very much is testament to that. But I love the fact that they do that these cars sort of drive along sort of the roads and gangways that is the footfall for all the visitors, sort of thing, in their way to go. You hear the whistles, you see the barriers, the rope barriers come up. It feels very dynamic, it feels very sort of live, it feels like a very sort of ongoing, engrossing sort of process, sort of thing. It's
a living thing to sort of watch and be part of. And obviously, because you're as a punter, if you're attending and you're sort of milling around the paddocks, you become sort of a part of it as the cars start swarming around you. They sort of either go to their races, they go to scrutineering, they go to the fueling station, they head out to assembly area. And the amount of people that will float around the assembly area before a race, or in the gap between what's called tow road and the assembly area. So tow road is the lovely sort of tree-lined avenue where all the cars sort of accumulate before they go through to the assembly area. And you essentially get this sort of slow-moving sort of slideshow of cars as they all filter past. So you get to see everything come past.
Builds the excitement. Builds the anticipation. I mean, you can be excited for these events as it is, sort of thing, but, seeing them on their way, sort of thing, making eye contact with the drivers who are sort of, visor down in the zone, sort of thing, it's brilliant.
And you get sort of, the cars are often being driven through by mechanics. You get the drivers sort of walking alongside, or sort of chatting with their team members. And it's a great chance to sort of see some of the faces and the drivers that are coming through. And especially Revival has this great ability to pull in big names for it as well. Obviously with Jenson Button racing this year, 2009 world champion.
Oh, that was a big thing for me, because I've always wanted to watch him race. And he was my car of the show in Classic Car Weekly in this issue, his Jaguar C-Type, which happened to be Fangio's Jaguar C-Type, which I didn't realise at the time. And when I found out, I was like, well, that's a slam dunk. That's my car of the show. And to see him win by over a minute, I actually prefer seeing him drive that than a Formula One car. And then a few races later for the
RSC TT, we had Jacques Villeneuve, 97 champion.
I met Damon Hill.
I saw you desperately trying to get a selfie with him when he was in the car.
Yeah, and then I thought, no, I said, you know what, I'll just take a few photos, take a selfie. And then I thought better of it, and I thought, I'll just chat to him and just see how he's feeling. And I said, he was in the tribute parade for
the Jim Clark tribute parade.
Jim Clark tribute parade, where
Well, he'll have been driving his dad's car, wouldn't he?
He was, yeah. And Sir Jackie Stewart accepted the award on behalf.
The Silver Tun, yeah.
Yeah, and it was great talking to Damon Hill, because he got back in this car again. And I said, oh, Damon, how are you feeling? And he replied, he's got a good wit, Damon Hill. And he said, it's so comfortable. I feel like I could go good sleep in here with a... into sarcasm.
Did he have an easier time than the people who went out on the Friday parade, where literally they arrived onto the grid and moved off and then were met with a thunderstorm?
Oh yeah, no, he was much, the weather was okay at that point, wasn't it? Nice and dry. And
it was quite glorious at that point, wasn't it? It was almost take your coat off time.
It was, yeah.
One of those brief half-hour windows where you go, oh, I don't need this jacket on anymore for sort of half an hour. And the Friday Jim Clark Parade was wet, and there was some great footage. They had an onboard camera with Karun Chandhok in one of the Lotus cars, sort of a driver-facing camera. And it's just this sort of footage of him sort of going along, clearly trying to enjoy the fact that he's driving a car of one of his icons, but the weather means he's sort of having to properly like grin and bear it and grit his teeth against just cold, bitter rain being blown into his face. And you're sort of like, that's going to be such a divisive moment, because on the one hand you really want to love it, on the other hand you're having the worst time of your life because you're cold, wet and stuck in the middle of nowhere. But
the elements take over.
But again, another one of those big names that turns up. Karun Chandhok's always there. If you follow IndyCar, you've got Scott Dixon, Tony Kanaan. We've already mentioned Jacques Villeneuve. Like, the list goes on and on and on as you start digging through and sort of realise the touring car drivers. You've got Jake Hill, Tom Ingram that are there. Steve Soper was racing in the Alan Mann car. It's such a huge list of impressive names that all want to come here because the racing to them really means something. And it's for them to win some of these sort of cups and trophies, it is a proper milestone to sort of achieve in your career, especially when you're faced with elements as challenging as they were across the weekend. Let's say, I don't know who watched the RAC TT on the Sunday, but that was brutal conditions. And I think I've got imagery. That's the RAC TT practice from the Friday when it was good weather.
It's dry there.
I'll insert here into the video loop a picture of what it looked like on the Sunday, because it was absolutely teeming it down with rain. I walked an entire lap of the circuit to try and get some different photography angles, and I got back to the pits and I was just drenched and I soaked to the bone.
I remember hiding in the press tent with you guys thinking, I want to go out, but not that badly at the moment. But the good thing is about Goodwood is the commentary is spread over the whole site. So
it
doesn't matter if you're not next to the track. The commentary is so good. It doesn't matter where you are. You can hear what's going on. And sometimes if they're saying something that's interesting and there's someone down there, you can quickly get trackside and go and check out the race.
They've got the big sort of broadcast screens as well. So wherever you are, chances are you're not really missing anything. All the grandstands have got a big screen in front of them, so you can always see and hear what's going on. Yeah. They've got a good commentary team as well. They sort of wheel out for the presenting. So it feels like a sort of proper slick event, as if you were to attend sort of the MotoGP or Formula One. You've got this sort of constant sort of, it's like attending a modern day motorsports event, or as it would have been in period where you would have had someone in a commentary box talking their way through the race. And it's the same thing, and it's really well produced. And I know the production effort that Goodwood puts into it for Goodwood TV is enormous. One of my friends does a bit of the commentary for them, and it's sort of, for him, it's a case of getting there at 8 o'clock and they aren't finishing till sort of gone 7 o'clock most evenings.
Well, they've got these incredible cherry pickers that put people like 200 feet in the air.
Oh yeah,
you sort of spot them and it's just like, wow, that must be a fantastic experience. But if you need the toilet,
the camera ops that are stuck out in the middle of nowhere. I know the same for Silverstone as well. They have one camera op who's sat over the loop, and sort of you get this great top down shot of the cars as they sweep through, but at the same time you're like, I hope it doesn't get windy or cold up there, or start raining.
Or lightning.
There was lightning on the Saturday. A mate of mine, Andrew, got the shots, and he was stood shooting off the end of the pit wall. So he's got these great cars coming out of the chicane, and then there's lightning strikes coming down over the Supershell building.
Yeah. Really dark black cloud in the distance. But the conditions made for some, sadly for some, some interesting incidents where cars would sometimes, there was a lot of going off on the grass, and half the time they'd rescue it and get back onto track again. And there's lots of oohs and ahs from the audience, and there's the other ones where, that's got a big dent in it.
Yeah, I think
it made for
some dicey racing. Yeah,
it was always something happening, but
yeah, there was some dicey racing moments. I know RACTT, I went up to, I think I was at the top end, as at what's called St Mary's, right up there, and they essentially, I stood out on sort of one of the marshalling points, and while I stood there, we had three cars come off. One, they were able to push back onto track, and he got underway again. It was one of the Corvette Stingrays, and then a Sunbeam Harrington sort of skipped its way through the gravel and sort of bounced back onto track again. But we had an E-Type that just stuffed it into the wall next to us, and we had another one of the Sunbeams sort of again clart it into the wall further up the track and just sort of limp its way sort of to the marshalling point, where they sort of push it out the way and the racing carries on. And these guys are guys that are properly pushing for it, and you get the mechanical maladies car, they're classic cars. It's part and parcel of the event. And again, a lot has to be said for the sort of recovery teams, the marshal teams that keep the racing going, keep it going safely. Yeah. I think there's
expensive cars, and they're still hammering it right to the limit. Remind me of that chicane again behind us.
So this is the chicane that goes on to the start-finish straight. So we're looking at it from the outside of the circuit.
And
so
there's some pot plants on the left that look like they're still in position.
The pot plants at the moment are still in position because this photograph was taken on, I think, the Friday. On the Saturday, someone backed a car into it in the Whitson Trophy. They backed a Lola into it or a McLaren.
And they hung on to the rear deck for a good sort of 200 yards afterwards down the start-finish
straight. Well, that was it. They were on the back of the car. There's the car pulled away.
It sort of scattered them.
B&Q pot plants.
One of them did make the car.
Vendors are available, but I think someone had to go and buy some more.
Yeah, the car pulled into pit lane after that had happened, obviously for a checkover. But one of the plants was still on the back of it. So for sort of most of the weekend, this one errant plant was just sort of kicking around the pit wall.
Some memento.
As just sort of a case of, oh, that had happened. But again, sort of Goodwood, when it comes to the decoration and the sort of the visual effects of it, Goodwood is again known for it. You see the sort of bright yellow shots of members meeting where they've got all the daffodils, and the same again where you've got the sort of lovely green verdant sort of hedges that and grassways that the photographers all trample down across the course of a weekend.
It helps have that vintage feel to it. And the only thing that makes things I'm not in 1966 is the odd sight of a smartphone or whatever. Everything else is
back in time. Yeah, I'll admit to when I sort of do the photography, I do sort of edit through them a bit. And really, there's a great feature on Lightroom at the moment, which is people detection, and you can eradicate distracting people, which is great because you've obviously got your modern, you've got your Goodwood Marshalls in there, sort of their white sort of overalls at the trackside, which looks nice and period. And then you've got the official BARC marshals, which are in their oranges, which really jump out, especially when it's a very dark scene. You've got this day glow orange person at the back of shot, and you can sort of go click remove. And then all of a sudden, it looks like a period photograph all of a sudden. Yeah. You've just got the classic cars. You've got all the people in period dress and marshals in sort of little white overalls with tweed caps. And you're like, there we go, perfect.
I think it's amazing how many people actually get into it. You see very few people walking around in like jeans and trainers. Like,
and they receive odd stares when they do it as well. This is the thing. Like, as soon as you get inside, outside of Revival, you receive odd stares for being dressed the way you are. Until you get inside Revival, then all of a sudden, the table turns. You're the normal one running around. In my case, it was my workshop overalls and sort of a sort of wax jacket for the weekend and my heavy boots. But everyone's in sort of their tweed suits, their period attire.
But you do a double take if you see someone in a hoodie, for example.
I saw someone in a Red Bull jacket, and I was like, you've not got that. Shunned.
James and I popped over to Bottoms Auctions on the other side of the road, actually, and that was quite an eye-opener, wasn't it? Because as you were already there when I got there, but a car was just going over £1 million as we were there. I can't remember which one.
I think that was the AC Trobe, wasn't it?
The sort of one that was always featured in like sort of the highlight adverts before the event. It was that lovely black racing coupe, Bell and Coven or something. Yeah, that one did look nice. Over £1 million for that.
Yeah, maybe for 1.3, I want to say, or 1.5.
I sat there for quite a while listening to all the bids coming in. It was
it was crazy. The guy with the hammer knew the
Thor.
Thor, yeah.
Bob the Builder.
That's the one. He knew the. He was referring to one of the bidders by a first name, so clearly well known.
a familiar crowd buying up the cars.
I'm going to have that. He was almost like, I'm going to have that car.
Because this is the other thing is there is like sort of we've spoken about it before with Festival of the Unexceptional, the photo effect when it comes to driving up prices for cars. And Goodwood, certainly the Revival, has very much the same impact when it comes to cars that are eligible to race at the Revival will often command a slightly higher price than cars that are basically the same but ineligible. So a car that was produced a year outside of the boundaries. And I was speaking to, again, sort of press and PR for the Austin Car Company, so the people that produced the J40s, the little pedal cars for the Setrington Cup. And before Goodwood had the Setrington Cup, you could pick up those sort of rotty little J40s for under £100 if you found one sort of in fairly decent nick working order. As soon as they started appearing at Goodwood, prices went through the roof because you could only enter the Setrington Cup if you've got one that was made in period. And while they do the continuation chassis of them, they aren't eligible. It's only the period 50s ones that are. And all of a sudden, prices of these went up into the thousands and then tens of thousands of pounds. And it sort of became, which is a great example of the way that the rest of the car market for this works as well.
Do you not see similar with like Austin cars in general? I think in particular sort of the A30 and A35s.
Yeah.
10 years ago, I don't remember seeing them in any sort of capacity racing. But as soon as they started appearing in the St. Mary's Trophy, entire businesses and cottage industries sprung up about supporting those vehicles and helping people make homages to those cars. So
yeah, there was obviously they appeared in the St. Mary's Trophy, and also I think quite a few years back the Silverstone Classic had one which was again a similar concept to the St. Mary's Trophy, which was an owner celebrity race. We had celebrity drivers doing it, were doing one race, and then the owners doing a second race, or sort of race sharing. And that again made everyone go, "Ooh, those Austin A30s look a good bit of fun. I could take those classic saloon racing." And all of a sudden,
James Hunt drove one, don't you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, he had a little van one. A mate of mine's got one as a saloon, and he's properly worked it over because, again, the same chap that helped me build my MG midget engine up. So it's sort of lowered. It's got a race tuned A-series engine in it. It's black with a lovely JPS livery down the side of it, and it looks mint. But again, it's sort of part of this thing of all of a sudden they became the cool thing to have, and it's sort of part of that Goodwood effect. But again, you get to the event and you see those cars, and these aren't evocations or continuations or homages. A lot of them are the real deal. They'll be ex-works race cars. They'll be cars that are raced and contested in period. I know the Ford Tejero that was crashed at the start of the RAC TT was one that Jackie Stewart had contested in period.
Oh, wow. And
sort of, you've got a feel. I think it was Jake Hill that was driving it. You've got a feel for, I think, for Jake Hill, who was driving it at that point in time, sort of going, "Ooh, I have just been spun round into the wall before I even got turn one." Mm. In a car that Jackie Stewart, who is currently stood up on the balcony, raced in period, and you sort of go, that's going to be an interesting one to contend with mentally. But then they wheeled that car back into the pits, gaffer taped the door shut, pulled the broken glass out of the window, and sent him on his merry way.
Well, so he carried on, did he?
Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, Jake Hill absolutely goes for it every time he's racing. If you've ever seen him at things like the members' meeting or Festival of Speed, especially, his adaptability as a racing driver is phenomenal. I've spoken about it on motorsports podcasts, and that makes him great fun to watch when it comes to the revival, because he does not hang about, and he's up against one of his greatest rivals, usually Tom Ingram, who is also no slouch when it comes to peddling saloon cars and sports cars. So you get these great races at the front. I think Tom Ingram now holds the distinction of being the only person to win the RSC TT back to back. So he's done quite well for himself this weekend, because he had a different car. Last year it was in a TVR. I can't remember what he was in this year. I think it might have been a Cobra.
It'd be so easy just to cover these cars in Cornwall and not give them a good go. But,
you give them to touring car drivers and let them absolutely rinse them.
But again, I think that's one of the beauties of the revival, is that you actually get to see these cars being used. I mean, most of the time you go to a car show and you see something that's just parked up, static, it's shiny, whereas that's actually been given the hammer, isn't it?
Yeah, like properly whipped around. And again, they sort of come back into the paddock covered in sort of little battle scars. They're covered in mud, and sort of, certainly after the Sunday, they're covered in sort of streaks of rain and dirt and everything. And you go, that's how it was supposed to be used. It was built for this purpose, and it was still enjoyed for it.
The rules are tight. I went to the scrutineering area, and they're really strict on that. This is proper, like, you know, racing to the rules.
The winner of the Sussex Trophy was disqualified after the event as well. That came out on Monday morning. That it was a, I think it was an exhaust manifold that wasn't period specific, so his win was stripped from him, unfortunately. But even that. Again, the dedication to period authenticity extends even down to the Setrington Cup. Last year, there were drivers in the Setrington Cup also disqualified, which is quite funny when you think about it, because it's just a fun children's race. But again, such is the urge to try and win, because it adds value to your vehicle, that people were finding loopholes to exploit. So longer pedal throws and different wheel tyre profiles for Setrington Cup to try and get an edge.
Can you imagine just disqualifying a kid in the Setrington Cup?
I know. Because you're going to have to go and tell the kid and explain to them that, sorry, mummy and daddy illegally modified your car.
Tarquin would be devastated.
Heartbroken. And it was worth winning it this year as well. They got little Ralph Lauren backpack goodie bags. I was like, that's a really tidy rucksack.
Oh, yeah, Ralph Lauren. And they were sponsoring me. I found myself in their VIP area by accident.
Found yourself. Completely by accident.
No, he literally found himself. Listen, found his true spirit.
To the listeners, the finger food does not eat itself. So someone had to help him out. And I you know, as on behalf of CCW, I represented us. And
I still don't know how you got in there. Did you just sort of go up to it and go, "Can I come in here, please?"
No, he definitely did not say, "Can I come in?" He just went in with an aura of, "I'm meant to be here."
Well, I had enough tweed on to get me in, and by that point it had rained so much that it absorbed all the rain, so I was kind of like a Michelin Man version of tweed. But it seemed, it was right next to race control, so you're right by the start finish, so you could see the cars flying out of the pits and obviously from the grid. But it was a good view to watch it. One thing I meant to mention from, sorry, going back very briefly to the car park. This is my car of the car park, and it has gone in, but why it has gone in is not there. But Steve Cooper with his 1971 Citroen SM. Now, that in itself is a great car. The only reason he bought that car is because he's got a 1960s Citroen DS, and he was doing it up, and he just wanted something to keep him going. So he went and bought himself another classic car just to keep himself ticking over.
So while he was doing up one big wafty Citroen, he went and bought a second big wafty Citroen.
You just going and buying another midget just for fun. Yeah.
I did genuinely, there were points where I was contemplating simply just buying another midget, so I had one to rag about
just
in.
Just get
but
a micro, mate.
There's no Maserati engine midgets, though, unfortunately.
No,
is
there isn't, which does make them a bit easier to sort of look after, in theory. Where are we going? That was it.
Sorry, back to, that was a bit of a tangent, but yeah, but back to the
back
racing.
Back to your Ralph Lauren experience.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I mean, it's... I got a sniff of how the other half live, and I didn't waste my go, that's for sure.
The flip side.
I even got James in. I texted you guys, said, you need to get in here. There's some seriously good champagne and food happening here. And James found me, and they gave him a bottle of water, and I'm there with my Moët.
I would have
my second drink.
And I would have joined you, but I was still working, I'll have you know.
We were networking.
Networking. Yes. I'm doing the air quotes with my fingers.
So you're saying you hadn't finished your work and he had finished his work.
I was being diligent in ensuring that I had sufficient coverage across the weekend. Are you saying that been networking? We've got a keepers coming up of Ralph Lauren's entire car collection. Is that
Ralph,
what we're doing?
Well, I didn't see Ralph.
Ralph wasn't there himself. Disappointing.
Certainly, lots of other people were enjoying his fine food and drink, including myself. But
say you could have come away with like the most high class selection of keepers articles possible, just an endless series of Aston Martins appearing in the keepers.
Yeah, well, it was so high end there. I said to James, I said, I think I'm sitting next to famous people's sons or daughters here. They look familiar, but I'm not sure why. You know. So anyway, it was fun. It was a good place to stand and eat. Vol-au-vents and cakes and things like that, and while watching the racing, and after I'd finished my work, so I thought I'd treat myself.
It must have been good because as we left, you went back in to have another look at what the food selection was.
I did go back in because I didn't know if they'd brought anything new out. They hadn't, so I just had to see them again. So
the flip side to that coin is I had a friend bring me a Evian sippy bottle of champagne while I stood in the assembly area, so I didn't get it from a nice flute instead. It was a recycled bottle of champagne, which was still nice.
I was absolutely parched
come Saturday afternoon. And my Will sort of appears at the side of the assembly area and goes, do you want a drink? And I go, oh yeah, I could go for something. And he pulls out of his pocket this Evian bottle of water that's just full of champagne. I'm like, yeah, go on.
I did say to you that I'd be very worried if someone gave me an Evian bottle of kind of a
yellowy green liquid sort of looking.
Just sniff it
first. It tastes like very good champagne, actually. So top choice from him. But that was
back down to earth with a bump. Here we are.
Back now somewhere in Peterborough in the drizzle. What a varied life we lead.
I will say, I think the coverage that's gone in to Classic Car Weekly and the work that you guys have done, you know, great news stories, fantastic photography. It's a really good package of content that's out today.
I mean, there's so many bits we haven't really sort of properly mentioned. Obviously, there's bits and pieces in the coverage. Gents, I'll go for sort of, as we go to wrap up, your favourite story that you uncovered across the weekend, your favourite thing that you found and sort of put together for the paper that people can look forward to when they pick up this week's issue. Chris, we'll start with you.
I think it'll have to be the Alpine that I found in Earl's Court. I wasn't aware that Alpine as a brand had such a history of supporting women in motorsport. So they had a couple of examples of cars there that were driven by some very famous French racers. And I think what really made it for me was they had these cars in a line, and then you can't see them in the photos that I've taken. But on the back wall, they had like these old CRT TV sets, and they were playing period coverage of the these cars in action, sort of thing, in the 70s. It was fantastic to sort of see the stories told in that way. Certainly better than just putting out placards and boards and things and having to stand there and read it. You've got the car in front of you, and you can sort of see it, sort of, you know, doing this these incredible sort of, you know, Monte Carlo tracks and even sort of, you know, the Le Mans races and things like that as well.
Yeah.
I spent quite a lot of time there just absorbing sort of all of those scenes. It was really quite incredible.
Am I right in thinking that maybe Michelle Mouton started out in Alpine as before she moved before she to moved Audi? Before she moved to Audi,
So yeah, very much history. Cut her teeth with that brand. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, brilliant. Either of the Jameses, which one of you wants to jump in with your favourite story from the weekend that you found?
You first.
I think for me, it'd have to be the Jim Clark celebration. I think that was fantastic.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think I can't remember if it was you or you.
You were hanging out for that, weren't we, on the grid? We were just walking around the cars. And
but found yourself marching in step to the pipe band.
Yeah, they brought a marching brass band. All dressed in their kilts and everything and their finery, and it was, I don't know,
from where I was, apart from sending the band, probably sending like a really quiet crowd watching it, everyone was just like really involved. And then when the sheep went down the track, I don't remember hearing a single sound.
No,
it was just like a really one of those.
I think everyone was
moments.
Shocked, they were just like, they escaped. No, this is on purpose, yeah.
It was one of those things you sort of go, only at Goodwood would you have sort of this incredible array of brilliantly important historical cars, including his Indy 500 winner, Jim Clark's Indy 500 car, that had been flown over for the event from America. And then obviously the vehicle's owner had gone, it's fine, just herd a load of sheep past this essentially priceless and irreplaceable car. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, it speaks to the Goodwood ethos, doesn't it? So, yeah. Very aware of him, you know, being a farmer first and foremost, always sort of kept a toe in that side of the things, even when he was racing at the highest level. There's plenty of people that would, you know, just sort of put that to the side, but Goodwood being Goodwood just sort of brought it to the fore and did a tribute that only they could do for the reasons you've sort of described, sort of thing. Yeah. I love the Jim Clark side of things as well. I've written about him extensively, and yet I was still learning things. I had no idea prior to Goodwood that he had connections with Alfa Romeo, and in fact did car testing for them. So I learning things all the time, sort of thing. And it was, you know, was it about 30, 40 cars in total? I can't remember.
Yeah. But including the grid, wasn't
Go-Go
it?
Mobile as well.
It was and that wasn't even in the race car. That was just a complete surprise, sort of thing. And again, that's sort of the Goodwood way, isn't it? Sort of thing. When I'm talking about these Easter eggs and things like that. There is always so many little surprises that put smiles on your face. So, yeah.
The Go-Go member got a massive cheer when eventually crossed the line as well, didn't it?
Oh, it was one of the slowest things to lap alongside the sheep at
that
the
was
T2.
So funny. But you'd see it, you could hear it coming. Oh, here it comes. Bless him.
Yeah, because the safety car would set off and all the F1 cars of Jim Clark's heritage would set off. And they were probably
the frontrunners were putting there. It wasn't like a normal... It wasn't
a parade. Parade.
All due respect to the camper vans, there was no parade for them. They were
showing off what those cars could do, and then you've got the Go-Go Mobile basically as a back marker with another safety car behind it just to sort of act as blocker, so someone in a heritage F1 car to plow into the
back. If you weren't paying attention or you didn't know, you would have just thought that this is just a car that's this broke out and decided to sort of do a rogue lap just for a bit of sort of publicity. So
you expect to see like the Lotus Cortinas sort of going
exactly
around. You expect to see like a couple of other sports cars and saloon cars, and then there's just a Go-Go Mobile and you go, how have you got here? But okay, Mr. Sadlier, then your pick story of the weekend. What jumped out to you? Car you found or a story you covered?
Well, aside from like speaking to Damon Hill for that during the warm up to that parade, and it's a bit of a hero of mine. It was back to the Goodwood car park and the car show in itself, and some of the people I met, and the vibe and the kind of good spirit and happy joy, even in bad weather, of these people it was just really lovely. But two people I met very quickly. I met a girl called Martina. She's only 21. She's had her first car is a 1965 MGB GT. She's just learned to drive. She said, right, my first car is going to be an MGB GT. I live in London. It's ULEZ exempt. It's tax exempt. I'm already financially up. And she said, everyone thinks that, you know, why would I get a car like this? She says, well, I can do my own mechanics on it. So she's taught herself classic car mechanics. She's got a friend who's got some garage space. And, you know, and she managed to fit a new alternator herself just the other day before coming to Goodwood, and I was like, oh, so inspired by that. I mean, if you told me to change an alternator in an MGB, I couldn't. I'm just not that technically savvy. But and then I met, this is quite a heartwarming story, one last one before we before I wrap up. My favorite is Adrian Parker with a 1959 Standard Companion. Now, he bought that as a tribute to his wife's late father, and basically took it as a wreck, fitted it all up, painted it exactly how he had it back in the day from the photographs, and then surprised her by opening a garage, and there was getting a bit of a lump in my throat. At the time, I was really I was bawling like a baby. But yeah, anyway, it was a bit of a slow build, and he was having to do it really on the quiet, and it was, like I say, there was bits missing, but he managed to get it exactly like his wife's father had it, and she was over the moon. And yeah, it's a keeper.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, sorry, that's it.
No, that's
sorry,
a brilliant story.
Extended
it's
my.
It's what you go to Goodwood for, though, is those stories that you go to these events because people's connection with cars, more than anything else, is why these events exist. It's the fact that people love their cars and the stories they carry.
What was your highlight other than that amazing moustache you were sporting?
The moustache was great. I'm trying to think, highlight from the weekend. It's tricky because I have an absolute low light, which was watching my mate barrel roll his Austin Healey to avoid crashing into the back of a Jaguar E-Type in the Stirling Moss Trophy. So
Was he okay?
He's fine. He's got concussion, had his racing license suspended for 3 months as a precaution.
Oh, no.
Because, yeah, if you get checked, if you get concussion at a race meet, essentially they go, that's enough for you for 3 months. So yeah, the Pearson Jaguar E-Type in the Stirling Moss blew a coolant line, spun on its own coolant, ended up on the grass on the outer loop of the circuit. I think it was Gary Pearson was driving at the time, kept it off the tyre wall, and then the Bill Rawls prepared Healey spun on the coolant as well. My mate Rich comes barreling round in the 1959 Works Austin Healey rally car, spots this spinning Austin Healey in front of him, as well as a couple of other cars that are currently sort of spread across the track, and goes, well, can't crash into them. That would be very annoying and painful and expensive. I'll put it on the grass and try and avoid everything. Obviously, at this point, it's been raining pretty much all weekend long. The grass is closer to an ice rink than it is terrain. Finds himself now barreling with no brakes and no steering towards the E-Type, and just has to sort of pick a gap and goes for the gap between the E-Type and the wall, which unfortunately isn't quite wide enough for an Austin Healey, and at about 100 miles an hour, clips the front corner, which basically barrel rolls the car over the E-Type, lands it on its roof, and then continues to roll over onto its wheels. I've seen the onboard shot from the E-Type, and it is incredibly impressive. Not only Gary gathering it up and not putting it in the wall and keeping it sort of straight and getting onto the grass and out the way, but then you hear just there's this sort of brief moment of silence where he's obviously shut the Jag off because it's no longer got any coolant in it. You hear this brief moment of silence, and then you hear this sort of almighty rubber squeak, as obviously at this point the Austin impacts with the tyre wall. And then you just see the Austin come past, sort of Top Gun style. I was inverted. Literally just over the E-Type, and then lands on its roof and continues its roll. And yeah, Rich got out the car. He was fine. One of the other drivers pulled over and sort of helped him out the car, because at that point, marshals aren't technically allowed on the circuit. While it's still a live circuit, marshals can't get down.
For safety points.
The driver's the only people that are allowed to be out on a live circuit, either in or out of a car. So one of the other drivers pulls over, sort of pulls the door open, sort of goes over and checks Richard's okay. At that point, they then red flag the race, marshals allowed down, and Rich, still sort of sound of mind, sees the because of the way the door has now been dented in, the roof has been compressed down, sees the marshals about to try and crowbar open the door, and he goes, no, don't do that, we'll be gentle, please. Because it's an important car.
Let's take our time.
He's fine. He's doing well. I've spoken to him since and checked, and he's doing all right, recovering nicely. But yeah, essentially there was no point him floating around on Sunday. So that was my low light from the weekend. Highlight from the weekend? I don't know. I think it's tricky to say because I absolutely love the Goodwood Revival. I always find it so tricky to pick out sort of my absolute favourite bits. I think it's got to be the Glover Trophy, which was the race for Formula One car. No, Richmond Gordon Trophy, sorry, which is the race for Formula One cars from 1955 through 1960. And watching the guy from who had qualified in fourth place go through to take the win in absolutely biblical conditions. Spray everywhere, practically no visibility, and this chap just hops in a BRM and just absolutely whips it around the track. And he's just fighting his way through, making overtakes where people are sort of gingerly going into turns.
Yeah.
No brakes, no, because you're on skinny old sort of crossbody tyres at that point, sort of edging cars into these turns, and he's just absolutely barreling into them and giving it his all. And I'm like, yep, you know what, Andy, you've earned that one. I'll give it to you, Andy Willis, there in the Hall and Hall prepared BRM. I was like, yeah, that's a sound effort. Credit to where it's due on that one. That was an impressive drive. So I think that for me has to be a highlight, because great race start, you see just this wall of spray coming towards you, and then a soul green BRM emerges from it, and then shooting off the end of pit wall, you've got the spray coming off the tyres, and sort of the visual aspects of it were sort of so perfect to enjoy, even if the weather was dire. So anyway, that's my highlight from the weekend. Low light and highlight for me. Complete polar opposites, but there we go. But I think we've been talking about Good Revival plenty enough. There's lots more to enjoy in this week's issue. We've got a 5 trials of the Volkswagen Type 2, which you've written, James. Obviously, sort of tying in with the celebrations, Chris, there's a brilliant feature, I think, that you put together on the life and times of Jim Clark through the cars that he'd driven. There's a lot to enjoy in this issue, because it is a bumper issue. We've crammed so much in, I can't quite remember all off the top of my head. So it's worth picking up from new shelves. Otherwise, gents, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Nice one.
And we'll be back next week with a new issue of Classic Car Weekly and another edition of the Classic Car Weekly podcast.